Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the BCE First Quarter 2017 Results Conference Call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Thane Fotopoulos. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Wayne. Good morning to everybody on the call. Joining me this morning, as usual, are George Cope, BCE's President and CEO, as well as Glen LeBlanc, our CFO. As a reminder, our first quarter results package, updated 2017 financial guidance targets, and other disclosure documents, including today's slide presentation, are available on BCE's Investor Relations webpage. In addition, for today, because our annual general meeting that will be taking place later this morning in Ottawa, we'll be ending the call a few minutes earlier than usual. We'll take as many questions as time permits after George and Glen have completed their formal remarks. Before we get started, I want to draw your attention to the safe harbor statement on slide two. Information in this presentation and remarks made by the speakers today will contain statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking and therefore subject to risks and uncertainties. These forward-looking statements represent our expectations as of today and accordingly are subject to change. Results may differ materially. We disclaim any obligation to update forward-looking statements except as required by law. Factors that may affect future results are contained in BCE's filings with both the Canadian Securities Commissions and the SEC and are also available on our corporate website. With that, over to George.
Great. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Let me turn now to the presentation. The company had 2.9% service revenue growth in the quarter, and as people would have seen this morning, driving a 2.4% increase in BCE's adjusted EBITDA. I think it's worth calling out, though, that we were impacted also by about 35 million dollars in one-time regulatory impacts. Really quite a strong financial quarter, considering that impact to our EBITDA on a year-over-year basis. Wireless continued to have excellent financial performance, as can be seen in the metrics, and strong wireless postpaid growth. Our continued disciplined focus in the marketplace drove 37,000 internet and IPTV net adds, and we enjoyed our 11th consecutive quarter of wireline adjusted EBITDA growth. We announced the continuation of our fiber rollout with an announcement in the first quarter of a plan to build out the city of Montreal. Our media business had actually quite a reasonable quarter with one impact, which Glen will address, which was the Super Bowl SIM/sub decision that had an impact on the EBITDA of our media business. Most importantly, strategically in the quarter, as we had forecasted, we were able to close successfully the MTS acquisition. If we just quickly look at the MTS acquisition, strategically for us, it moves our ILEC footprint now to 73% of Canadian households, or 11.2 million of the 15.4 million households in the country. Also, if you look at household starts in Canada at about 200,000 a year, that's about 150,000 household starts in our footprint now. Of course, therefore, over a five-year period, we'll be close to 12 million households covered. We have 3.7 million internet subs today, so quite a broadband opportunity for us going forward with this acquisition. If we turn to looking at the scale we've been able to achieve by adding MTS to our organization, we've picked up about 700,000 wireless internet and IPTV subscribers. We've become the number one wireless provider in the province of Manitoba. We've added 6.6% to our internet base and over almost 8% to our IPTV customer base. We expect the transaction will be free cash flow accretive this year, and Glen will address that in his presentation. We also have increased our synergies, as we reported earlier, from expected 50 million dollars to 100 million dollars. Those have been driven by completion of our due diligence, which showed additional opportunities. I'll just call out one particular area. Being a national carrier, of course, we can now move traffic that would have up until now been on our competitors' networks, which will now be on the Bell network. A good example would be we have already moved all of the MTS wireless customers who would have roamed on our largest competitor in Canada now roam on us, and that was done within the first few weeks of the integration. Overall, the network traffic movement between wireless and wireline will generate about 25 million dollars of the synergies within the first 12 months. In total, of course, the transaction being cash flow accretive will continue to drive our industry-leading free cash flow margins, continuing to contribute to the capital required for our fiber build and dividend growth strategy. Turning to page seven. Service revenue growth of $127 million in the quarter was actually the highest absolute dollar growth in the history of Bell Mobility, and that was driven through the subscriber growth and the continued increase in strong average revenue per customer. We saw an uptick in usage year over year on our LTE subscriber base of 37%, and the speed that we're bringing to the marketplace is clearly now driving usage, and that continues to drive increase in ARPU, increase in revenue, and as you can see, an increase in net adds up 38% year over year. Churn would have been flat year over year if not for the remaining removal of a corporate customer that we talked about in the fourth quarter. That customer was an ARPU of about $30, but did impact our churn on a year-over-year basis. And we generated a simple free cash flow margin in the wireless business of 38% in the quarter, really quite a strong financial result for the organization. Our wireless network investments continue. At the end of the year, we had 98% of the country covered with LTE. At the end of 16, we were 74% of LTE advanced. And as we exit 17, 87% of the country will have access to LTE advanced services. We also just last week announced as the first carrier in North America to deliver quad band speeds. And so combining now combining four different spectrums together, combined with what is known as 256 QAM technology, will give our subscribers speeds on average of between 22 and 174 megabits and speeds actually up to as much as 750. We already have 650 sites deployed. The new Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus product enables this technology to work, so we will clearly have the fastest wireless network in the country and in North America with the rollout of this handset and this new technology. As I reported before, 95% of our cell sites now have high-speed fiber backhaul, so there's no bottleneck there. And as we look through 17, we will, through this year, and exit the year with the fastest wireless network in all major cities in the country. Turning to the wireline, in the quarter, we added 37,000 Internet and IPTV net adds. Internet net adds were 15,000 in total. 24,300 net adds in our IPTV footprint. On the IPTV side, we added 22,400 net adds, clearly seeing a maturing as our footprint expansion is not as aggressive as it had been in the past, and absolutely seeing some of the TV subscription, OTT substitution. We will address the OTT substitution market in the coming weeks with a new innovative product for the marketplace, which the street will hear about over the next 4 to 6 weeks. Turning to our investment in fiber, just an update for our investors. In the quarter, we announced an $850 million investment to deploy fiber in the city of Montreal. That is 1.1 million businesses and homes. Positive from an investment perspective, this is a unique build as it will be 90% aerial and only 10% buried versus Toronto, which has a much more buried versus aerial ratio relative to the Montreal situation. In terms of Toronto, we are on track. We will have the majority of the city completed by the end of this year, so we'll have the ability to mass market fiber in the Toronto market as we enter 2018. Just a few metrics for our investors who have been asking us. In the quarter, about 40,000 subscribers were added to our fiber footprint. If we are in the line where I hope we will be, we should be close to about 1 million customers on our fiber footprint by the end of the year. At this point, over 60% of those customers have over 300 meg services. By the summer, 80% will have 300 meg plus services, and 100% will be over 150 meg. And we're seeing an average ARPU on that customer base of about $125. And that's a blend of those that would have TV internet, some would have triples, some would have simply even TV with internet in their bundling. So that's where we are in terms of the fiber, but very positive quarter, and we can see the momentum. And there's absolutely no doubt in our mind that the launch of fiber in Toronto will be a game changer for our company going forward. Turning to media, reasonable quarter, continued to be number one in conventional TV. Also, from a sports perspective, saw a 13% increase in viewership at TSN, driven by the success of the Toronto Raptors. And also on the tennis side, you can see a 45% increase year over year. So some strong results there. Continue to see growth on Crave TV. And I'll turn it over to Glenn, and he will take you through some of the financial impacts of the Super Bowl for us in the quarter. With that, let me turn it over to Glenn.
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. Let me begin with a quick summary of our Q1 financial results on slide 13. We had a very solid start to the year, reflecting Bell's team's consistent execution of our focused commitment to deliver profitable subscriber acquisition, control our costs, and invest in advanced broadband networks to drive future growth. Although the MTS acquisition was completed on March 17th, MTS financial contribution in Q1 was relatively small in terms of revenue and EBITDA, and therefore immaterial to overall consolidated and operating segment results this quarter. Service revenue grew a very respectable 2.9%, led by the accelerated top-line growth in wireless, higher year-over-year wireline residential revenue in the quarter, which saw a notable step up in the competitive intensity, and positive growth for Bell Media. Adjusted EBITDA also up a healthy 2.4%, yielding a higher year-over-year margin of 41.1%. This was achieved despite the $35 million George mentioned earlier in regulatory-related impacts absorbed in the quarter from wholesale internet tariff rerates, mandated customer refunds for canceled services, and the loss of simultaneous substitution advertising rights for the Super Bowl. Higher adjusted EBITDA drove 2.4% growth in adjusted EPS to 87 cents per share and a 17% increase in free cash flow, which grew to $489 million this quarter. The statutory EPS was down 4% over last year to 78 cents. The year-over-year decline was mainly the result of higher severance, acquisition, and other costs related to the MTS acquisition. That does it for overall consolidated for financial results. So let me turn to our operating segments, starting with wireless on slide 14. Another excellent quarter of financial performance with service revenue that continued to trend higher, increasing 8.0% on the back of strong ARPU and postpaid subscriber growth, as George detailed earlier. This drove adjusted EBITDA growth of an impressive 7.5% and high service revenue margins of 47.7%, even as we spent $35 million on postpaid customer acquisition and retention compared to last year. This higher spend was principally the result of a sustained high level of market activity in the quarter, as well as higher handset prices that reflected a richer smartphone device mix and the impact of the weaker Canadian dollar, which accounted for approximately 30% of that increase. Lastly, in terms of cash generation, Bell Wireless continued to provide a strong contribution to BCE consolidated free cash flow, delivering growth in adjusted EBITDA less CapEx of 13.9%, even as we continue to spend significantly on carrier spectrum aggregation and the deployment of small cell technology to further enhance our network leadership position. Moving to the wireline segment on slide 15, we saw a notable improvement in Bell's wireline service revenue performance trajectory in Q1, increasing 0.7% year over year compared to a 0.3% decline last year. This represents our best result in almost 2 years and was realized despite the significant competitive and regulatory pressures that existed in the quarter. Our residential services unit led the way with 6.3% year-over-year increase in household ARPU driven by internet and IPTV customer growth and pricing discipline. Overall business market performance also improved with lower year-over-year rates of revenue and EBITDA decline supported by our Q9 acquisition. However, reduced customer spending by large enterprise customers on core connectivity, business service solutions, and data products due to the slow economy continued to cause some variability in overall results, as did the lower CRTC-mandated wholesale internet rates, which negatively impacted our wholesale performance once again this quarter. With respect to operating profitability, wireline adjusted EBITDA increased 0.4%, on a 0.5% reduction in operating costs, even with $19 million in year-over-year regulatory impacts absorbed in the quarter. Lastly, our wireline adjusted EBITDA margin expanded a further 20 basis points to an industry-leading 42.3%, yielding a best-in-class simple free cash flow margin, the flow-through margin of 19%, which provides us ample operating leverage to self-fund our broadband fiber build-out going forward. Turning to slide 16, revenue was up 1.3% in Q1 on the strength of higher year-over-year subscriber revenues, which grew 10.1%. This was driven by the national expansion of the movie network, contract renewals with several large TV distributors, as well as the continued Crave TV and TV Everywhere growth. Advertising revenues were down 4.7% this quarter, mainly as a result of the declines in conventional TV and radio. Consistent with ongoing industry changes in consumer media viewing behavior, the overall advertising market remained soft. Additionally, advertising demand in Q1 was impacted by the CRTC's decision to ban simultaneous substitution for the Super Bowl, which resulted in an estimated loss for us of around $11 million. This was partly offset by improved specialty sports and news channel performance compared to last year, as well as continued strong growth in our outdoor advertising. Mainly as a result of the flow-through of the lost Super Bowl revenue, Bell's Media adjusted EBITDA decreased 7.6% or $11 million. Normalizing for this impact, EBITDA was flat year over year. Slide 17 provides a breakdown of the parts of adjusted EPS for Q1, which was 87 cents per share or 2.5% higher year over year. Higher adjusted EBITDA contributed 4 cents to EPS growth. Also contributing to the higher EPS this quarter was lower year-over-year preferred share dividends, reflecting the impact of lower interest rates on rate resets and floating rate payments, as well as our higher other income that was driven by a pickup in equity income from one of our minority interest investments and mark-to-market foreign exchange gains on currency hedges. And in addition to all of our U.S. dollar-denominated spending for 2017, our U.S. exposure for 2018 has now been economically hedged through Q3 2018 at a blended rate of $1.30. These factors were partially offset by higher year-over-year depreciation and amortization expense, an increase in net interest expense reflecting more long-term debt outstanding due to our MTS acquisition. Moreover, there were no favorable tax provision adjustments this quarter compared to 1 cent per share last year. Lastly, adjusted EPS growth was impacted in Q1 by a higher share count due to the issuance of 27.6 million new BCE common shares as part of the consideration for the MTS acquisition. This resulted in a dilution of approximately 1 cent per share this quarter. Turning to 18, we generated free cash flow of $489 million this quarter, up 17% compared to last year, driven by higher adjusted EBITDA, an improvement in working capital, lower severance paid as last year's results reflected payments related to workforce restructuring initiatives undertaken at Bell Media and Bell Wireline in Q4 of 15. We also took advantage of favorable market conditions and a sustained low interest rate environment during the quarter to successfully complete a $1.5 billion dual tranche public debt offering on February 27th, the proceeds of which were used to put in place permanent financing for the MTS acquisition. This brought down our weighted average cost of debt to 3.23% from 3.33%, while maintaining our average term to maturity of just over 9 years. This quarter's free cash flow result also reflected a planned step up in cash taxes due mainly to higher installment payments for 17. However, this amount did not reflect the benefit of MTS tax loss carryforwards that we intend to utilize over the next few years starting in Q2 of 17. Finally, turning to our updated financial guidance targets for 2017 as summarized in slide 19. With the inclusion of MTS in our wireline and wireless operating results for essentially 9 months this year, we are increasing both BCE's consolidated revenue and adjusted EBITDA guidance for the full year 2017 to a range of 4-6%. This increased adjusted EBITDA guidance also reflects the benefit of approximately $30 million in operating synergies for 2017. Obviously, the full $100 million of annualized run rate savings is going to take a few years to achieve. Our adjusted EPS guidance for 2017 is being lowered to a range of $3.30 to $3.40 per share from the $3.42, $3.52 per share previous, to reflect an approximate 4-cent non-cash charge for the amortization of fair value increment of the acquired MTS assets that related mainly to customer relationships, as well as the dilution of around 10 cents per share from the BCE common shares issued to MTS shareholders in March. Lastly, as I outlined last May when we announced the acquisition, MTS will be immediately accretive to BCE's free cash flow, benefiting from both sizable operating synergies and tax losses, with a total estimated value of $300 million, of which $60 million will be utilized this year. However, we expect to incur cash severance and other MTS-related acquisition and integration costs this year. This, in addition to our planned CapEx spending in Manitoba, as well as higher cash interest payments from more than $900 million in MTS debentures and short-term debt being assumed, will moderate MTS's overall contribution to BEC's consolidated free cash flow growth in calendar 17. As a result, taking all these puts and takes into account, we are increasing our free cash flow guidance for 2017 to the range of $3.375 billion to $3.55 billion. That's strong growth of approximately 5 to 10%, which fully supports our 5.1% dividend increase and our $4 billion capital investment program for 17. Slides 20 and 21 are for your reference. They summarize the key financial assumptions underpinning our revised guidance targets. And with that, I'll turn the call back over to Thane and the operator to begin our Q&A period.
Great. Thanks, Glenn. So before we start the Q&A, I just want to remind participants of our time constraints this morning. So please keep your questions as brief as possible so we can get to as many of you as we can this morning. Wayne, with that, we can take our first question, please.
Thank you. Please press star one at this time if you have a question. The first question is from Richard Cho from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. I just wanted to kind of get a little bit more color on the competition from cable. It seems like it's been very robust in terms of the video and broadband side. Has that abated at all, and how should we think about video and broadband ads going forward as you build out Toronto and Montreal?
Great. Thanks for the question, Richard. First of all, as I tried to, with investors, give you a little bit of insight of what's happening in the fiber territory, you can see quite strong results there. In terms of in the quarter, yes, there were clearly, as we indicated in some of the notes, very aggressive acquisition offers in the marketplace by our competitors, possibly positioning in advance of the technology advantages we'll be bringing to the market. That may be what we've seen. We have seen a little mitigation or a change in some of those programs in the marketplace as we've entered into the second quarter and saw some pricing changes in the marketplace as well as we enter into the second quarter. So we'll have to see how that bodes for results going forward. But clearly it was an aggressive quarter. Interesting for us that we saw gross ads actually up in some of those segments, but actually still had the net ad results that we reported this morning, and we think that was some of the pricing in the marketplace. But outside of that, very positive overall for the company, with the direction we're in and the results we're seeing where we're making the investments to set us up for the future. But thanks for the question.
Thank you. The following question is from Simon Flannery from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thanks a lot. Good morning. George, perhaps you could just update us on the MTS acquisition so far, the integration, and perhaps you could compare it with where you were at this stage on Bell Alliant. And given this deal, where do you think you are in terms of your assets? We've seen a lot of deal-making in the U.S., more to come. Do you feel like you have what you need to be successful over the long term, or might we see more acquisitions, more divestitures going forward?
Yeah, so it's always hard to comment on M&A. What I would say from our perspective, it's now about executing on this strong asset pool that we have from one vertically integrated and two now, as I talked about, the footprint that we picked up as a result of MTS, which benefits not just our consumer business, but our B2B business, where off-net traffic before would have been obviously with a different carrier. So that that piece strategically, I think we're well positioned with the assets that we have in the marketplace. That's not to comment on the future, but we know now it's about executing what we have here. And on the, it's early days on the integration, but we have done a number of transactions, as people know, over the years. And probably as a result, we have a somewhat of a rhythm to what we want to have happen, and we're off to the races there. Good, strong start. I mentioned some of the early benefits already. You know, the fact that in the first few weeks we migrated the entire subscriber base to be on our network versus our competitors picks us up some early synergies. There will be other benefits like that going forward as wholesale agreements that MTS would have obviously purchased its access from Zayo in the past. As those contracts come due, of course, we'll migrate them to Bell. And then services even in the province of Manitoba that MTS may have purchased from other carriers such as Zayo, will obviously make sure we supply those through Bell. So those are some of the early benefits. And, of course, the other side from our perspective is to bring to Manitoba all the benefits of our Fibe TV product. Quite frankly, that product was, it's probably fair to say, not invested as robustly as our product portfolio has been. So we're bringing that to the marketplace. We'll be taking LTE Advanced to that marketplace. And so, you know, we're quite positive on the positioning. And in terms of delivering on the expense pieces, we're obviously 100% confident in that because we've done this many times in the past.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Greg McDonald from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Thanks. George, I'd like to jump back to video for a second, if I could. You made some comments on competition, and thanks for that. You also made some comments on an OTT product that you have prepared or is coming to address that risk. Is that to imply that there's a growth in OTT cord-cutting type activity? Can you comment on what's happening overall in that segment? And then as well, on the satellite side, so we've looked at sort of high 30,000 declines per on subscribers on a per-quarter basis. Could you comment on what the current urban versus rural mix is there? You know, there could be some mix change as time goes on where we're assuming that you're losing urban customers. And I'm wondering, at some point, do we get some stability or greater stability in that subscriber number as time goes on? Thanks.
Yeah, let me start with that, the end of the question. I would agree with your view on that. I don't have it top of head, so certainly Thane's happy to give a little bit of color to you on some of that. Clearly, it's as urban footprints have been more competitive with other services, ultimately our satellite business, I've said in the past, will be more in the rural markets, and at some point we would expect some stabilization of that, or at least a reduction in the rate of decline. And so we obviously aren't seeing it yet. But you would think that's what would happen, and that would be our expectations would align with yours on that. In terms of the OTT, I won't comment much other than obviously I mentioned it, so it's a fair question. We will enter that marketplace in a short period of time. There's clearly growth there. There are customers who are choosing OTT as the way they want to look, view video, and so we want to make sure we're playing in that. That's important for our TV product. It's important for our media assets. And it's important for our drive towards internet subscriptions. So on all three businesses for us, strategically it fits, and of course it can even enhance our wireless position. And so you'll see us pursuing that market, and we'll be coming back to the marketplace with some announcements in the coming weeks to make sure we capture a growing market there as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Maher Yaghi from Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. And I want to follow up on what you just said, George. And in light of the recent decision by the CRTC on net neutrality, can you discuss your views on future product development in wireless? And does it change how you might see wireless data buckets in the market? We have seen a move in many countries to launch unlimited plans. Does it make sense in Canada with this relative lower density in population?
Well, let me just say the strategy we're going forward with will absolutely recognize the rules that have been put in place in the country. So, you know, that is how our product rollouts will look going forward. Clearly, a number of years ago, we had a mobility TV product we thought was unique in the world, and it was impacted a number of years ago by really a confirmation of that decision just a couple of weeks ago. But in terms of the new product rollouts that we'll see in the marketplace, such as the ones we're talking about, they'll completely align with all the broadcast rules in the country and the internet rules in the country, yet at the same time allow us to, we think, creatively address a growing marketplace in Canada for our BCE shareholders.
Great. Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. The following question is from Philip Wang from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. Good morning. Just wanted to follow up on the fibers of the premise build in Toronto. You know, with the warmer weather, many of us living in the city have observed some construction activities from your service partners, including some of the prime neighborhoods with more traditional detached houses and yards. I assume that these neighborhoods have buried infrastructure. And so I was wondering, you know, what's the reception from residents have been like for the construction, and whether the cost and time incurred so far are in line with your expectations? Thanks.
Yeah, great question. You're right. We are very, very active in Toronto right now. There are neighborhoods that are buried versus aerial. I would say the customer reception has exceeded our expectations. When we notify people that we're in the neighborhood and we're doing fiber and would you like us to even do a pre-connect, a much higher percent of customers are saying, yes, we want the pre-connect. I think there's a recognition that if you can get glass to your premise or fiber to your home, you don't want to be in a home that doesn't have that capability. And so we're seeing that. In terms of our costs and the work, yeah, it is a lot of work and it is costly, but it's consistent with what we've shared with you in terms of guidance. As I mentioned, our goal is to end 17 to have, you know, the majority of the city completed, although we will have work to do in the 18 as well. We will have enough critical mass to begin, you know, mass advertising that product. And obviously, we're selling it now in areas where we are building. And you are correct that, you know, in Canada, the spring, summer, and fall seasons are really important to those builds because it's a little tougher, obviously, with buried when you're dealing with the winter.
So even though if I'm not a customer, you're coming to my door and you're seeing basically a lot of people just saying, yes, come and do the work anyway?
Extremely high. Yeah, okay. Very pleased. Doesn't mean you become a subscriber at that moment, so I want to make sure I caveat that with investors, but it does mean the home has the capability and people are wanting us to do it. And I don't want to say everyone is, but it's clearly this. We had an expectation, and it's above that internal expectation at the moment, which
okay.
is good news because over time it helps us save capital. We don't have to go back then to that home.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The following question is from Batya Levy from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Looking at your guidance, you finished the quarter at the high end of your prior guidance, excluding MTS. Just wanted to ask if there is any upside to the legacy footprint within the new guidance. And then just one question on the OTT. Strategically, will you use this product as a retention tool, or do you think about it more extensively? And if you could provide some color on the returns on your fiber investment under an OTT model versus linear TV.
Oh. Okay, I probably won't be able to answer all those to that level of detail. What I'd like to do is maybe defer some of the questions in the OTT till we're in the marketplace, but let me just back up. There's clearly a cord cut and cord shave marketplace. I think we've seen that not just in Canada, but in North America. And given that we are the leading TV provider in the country and the leading media company in the country, we want to make sure we're playing in that space. In the footprints that we provide TV marketplace today, and so you'll see us doing that going forward. And frankly, in terms of whether or not people will migrate from one product to another, that's a hard early call. Other than to say, if there are customers who are cutting the cord from our TV service or another TV service, part of the strategy around this approach will clearly be to make sure we're in the marketplace to have an offer for that customer. And then, Glenn, the first question?
Yeah, on your guidance, obviously I can't provide any further specificity or insight into guidance. What I will say is the new guidance we provided today truly is reflective of the acquisition we made in MTS, and we're very, very pleased to be able to provide that guidance and demonstrate 4 to 6% revenue and EBITDA growth and free cash flow growth that shows the accretiveness of that transaction of 5 to 10%. But beyond that, can't give you any more guidance specificity.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Jeff Fan from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Just a few follow-ups. First on the ARPU with respect to your fiber to the prem. If I heard you correctly, George, I think you said 125 is the ARPU that you're getting in on the fiber to the home customers. I'm wondering if I heard that correctly, and if you can just compare that to what you're getting currently in some of your fiber to the node ARPU to see if what that difference could be. The other question is related to your guidance. If I take a look at your free cash flow, certainly there's it's accretive on a total dollar basis. Wondering if it's still accretive if you look at it on a per share basis. And then on the tax losses, Glenn, you said you're going to utilize those in the next couple of years. So how do we think about how you're going to use that tax loss? Is this essentially something that you have that you can use to help you, you know, satisfy the dividend growth strategy, given that it's a pretty significant amount? And perhaps give us a little bit on how much you're actually using in 2017 of that $300 million. That'd be helpful. Thanks.
Thank you for one question. Glenn, why don't you answer the questions and I'll deal with the last one.
Sure, Jeff. Yeah, you rattled off a lot there. So I'll start with the tail end of that on the tax losses. I had mentioned that there's $300 million in tax losses. We'll use those over the next 24 months, with $60 million of it be used in calendar 17. And I'm not going to give further guidance beyond that, but we'll use them in 24 months, $60 million. In calendar 17, free cash flow or guidance you asked on that on per share basis. Yes, it's accretive on both an absolute and a per share basis. And
other than that, I think it clearly helps drive our dividend growth because it's a tax cash savings over time. So that's clearly helpful. And then in terms of the ARPU, is really what we did is share the fiber ARPU that we're getting into the household, and we're not going to disclose the other numbers for competitive reasons. It really was to make sure investors understood the speed that our customers are using, which is clearly a very high number in terms of the base that, you know, literally 80% will be at 300 and 100% at 150 by the summer, and that we're seeing obviously quite positive conversion to the fiber footprint.
So 125 was the fiber to the prem ARPU that you're getting today?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Exactly correct.
Great. Thank you.
Remember, that's a mix. You could have people in there that have triples. You could have people in there that have doubles. You could even have someone in there that has a single who simply has chosen, you know, a full internet package or has chosen a TV package. But generally, of course, that would be rare.
Great. That's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. The following question is from Aravinda Galaptig from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to touch on the TV platform. Obviously, you're going to face potentially tougher competition a year down the road as your cable competitor launches X1. From that perspective, obviously, you've talked about the improvements to your IPTV platform, the home hub, the stronger Wi-Fi power, et cetera. But I was wondering, you know, what can we expect in the next 12 to 24 months as you look at the sort of the improvements on the interface side, functionality side? Are you satisfied with the enhancements that's been envisaged, and what are your options on that front? Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. As we have said in the past, you know, Restart TV, our trending on TV, the only one with a total wireless set-top box for TV, the Netflix on it, all the product differentiations we have on Fibe TV, a number of those will even be maintained with the competitive response that we see coming. And secondly, we expect to have the superior TV product in the marketplace next year, even with the competitive offer, and we'll be making product announcements to that effect over the next coming months. But clearly, it would be premature to announce those now and allow the competitive marketplace to get ready.
Thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Drew McReynolds from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. George, big picture question, just shifting to wireless. Obviously, another good quarter for you. On the technology side, you did highlight some of the quad band technology you're rolling out. We're seeing in the U.S. some question about whether superior network technology is really moving the needle with consumer demand and market share, just with T-Mobile doing what it's doing in the U.S. I know it's a different environment up here, but you do seem to have that network leadership. Can you just talk to, does that still drive consumer demand, the network performance, and can you kind of rank that relative to things like customer service, distribution, price, et cetera? Thank you.
Well, we think, you know, first of all, the other three you mentioned are core. You know, if you don't have the distribution and service, you have other issues. Clearly, our financial results and our metrics, they're supporting the right results there. In terms of the network, it's very clear to us. We're just continuing to see the financial results that drive the rationale for the investment in these networks. I mean, Canadians use these devices, the better the speed, and that probably, you know, I've indicated a 37% increase in usage. Probably you would have seen there, it looks like in the quarter, we had a more significant increase in average revenue per customer than our largest competitor, and we think that's driven by the superior network offering that we have in the marketplace. And if we look at the demand for video, which is going to continue to really grow in wireless, when you get in the speeds of, you know, 22 to 174, and most days, you know, for those that are on the line using a Bell Mobility phone in some of the markets, you know you're getting 60 to 80 meg now on your handset. And so as a result, people are using the product more and more. We think that's the key differentiator for us, is that we attract customers who are heavy users, therefore obviously a valuable subscriber base. And also it's going to continue to be a positioning for us with what our technology team's done on carrier aggregation is really quite remarkable. And it's positioned us in Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, Halifax, and other major cities to have the fastest wireless network. And we think that's going to make a difference. And particularly with the backhaul work we've done, we think that's really important strategically. And, you know, we don't talk about it a lot, but since you've, you know, asked the question, as we roll out fiber, of course, you know, the fiber to the home that we're doing, we think sets us up really nicely as technologies evolve to smaller and smaller cell sites. People talk about 5G. The fact that we'll have all of those areas laid with fiber, I think, at some point will help amortize back into our wireless cost or help amortize the fiber cost, I guess, is another way to think about it. But it's really early days there for that. Hopefully that's helpful.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Adam Ilkowitz from Citi. Please go ahead.
Thank you. On the wireless side, I just wanted to ask about gross ad share. Obviously, you were up 7.7%, I think it was, on the postpaid side. The competitor was up a little bit more so far this reported. Wondering if you're seeing any share shifts besides the market expansion that we're seeing. Thank you.
Hard to know. We'd have to see everyone's, you know, reporting. You know, we don't, our prepaid to postpaid migrations don't count in our gross ads. I think one of our other companies does count them in their gross ads. So you've got to, you know, I think you've just got to be careful there. We tend to look at service revenue growth in the quarter as just, for us, driving Okara, we driving a fair share of that growth. I think we did. In fairness, we think so did our competitor who has reported, and that will just remains to be seen as other companies report. So we're pleased with where we were in the quarter, thought we had the right balance, and obviously a tremendous leverage from a financial perspective, seeing the network growth that we're seeing.
Thank you.
Wayne, I see there's one last question in the queue, so that will be our last question given our time constraints this morning.
Thank you. So the last question is from Rob Goff from Echelon Wealth Partners. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my question. My question would be on the wireless side, where we've seen consistent market outperformance. Is that in part being driven by device per account, and is technology actually driving that device per account?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We've talked about this before, and we understand it is a difference maybe between the U.S. and Canada. Clearly, the multiple device growth is happening. I think many on the phone may, if you're in Canada, you may have two devices, one business, one personal. Certainly, if you look at, you know, the population between, you know, 24 and 35, a lot of that population in the employment base now carry two devices. So that's clearly adding some subscriber growth in the Canadian marketplace. And I guess that's different by market, but I think that's been a benefit to all carriers in Canada. Is that helpful?
That's great. Thank you.
So once again, thank you to everybody who participated this morning. I'll be available later today following our AGM for any follow-ups and clarifications. So with that, have a good rest of the day, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference call. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.